Chapter 7, The Foundations of Being Polysecure in Your Relationships. Up until this point, I have predominantly used the umbrella term non-monogamy when talking about people with multiple partners. But as we saw in Chapter 4, people who are non-monogamous can be quite varied in the ways they practice having multiple partners. As we move further into the discussion of how to be polysecure, I talk specifically about people who are practicing polyamory. Polyamory is commonly defined as being the practice of having romantic, love-based relationships with more than one person. And we can add that it is also the form of non-monogamy where people have multiple romantic attachment figures. As previously mentioned as well, not all CNM relationships need to be attachment-based. We can have very meaningful, fulfilling, loving, and significant relationships with people who we are either less entwined with, don't want to label or define, or who we are not looking to actively build an attachment relationship with. Ideally, any type of relationship, regardless of how involved or not, is ethical, respectful, has open communication, and is considerate of everyone involved. But when we are in attachment-based relationships, more of us is required. So the rest of this book will center on people who are or want to be in polyamorous attachment-based relationships. Do we want to be attachment-based partners? The antecedent of being polysecure with your partners is first getting clear about whether you want to be attachment figures for each other. Our attachment-based relationships take time and investment. And so when referring to attachment-based partners, I am referring to a choice that we are making to intentionally cultivate and tend to the attachment-based needs within a particular relationship, whether that's with one or multiple people. Often falling in love with someone or feeling attached to them does not feel like a choice we make, hence why we call it falling in love instead of stepping into love. Our attachment figures might be people we feel levels of connection, compatibility, or intensity with right from the start for reasons that we just can't explain. Or they may be people with whom our romantic attachments have organically grown in potency and depth over time. However you come to be with the partners that you already feel attached to or the ones that you want to cultivate being more polysecure with, what is important is that at some point you are all clear that being attachment-based partners is what you want for the relationship. In monogamy, usually at some point people have the commitment conversation in hopes of better defining their relationship. But exactly what that means to each person and all the assumptions and expectations that each person is carrying are often left minimally discussed, if they're even articulated at all. In non-monogamy, unspoken expectations and assumptions typically do not bode very well. And intentional discussions about exactly what we're doing and why we are together are important for everyone involved to feel safe and secure. Since we're talking about attachment-based polyamorous relationships, we are talking about relationships in which you are committed to showing up for each other regularly, prioritizing each other from choice, not obligation, actively cherishing each other, doing the work required to build a relationship and possibly even building a life together, though having a life commitment is not a prerequisite for a secure attachment. Your attachment-based relationships might be with the partners that you refer to as your primary partners, inner circle partners, nesting partners, or anchor partners. You may or may not live with them or have children with them, and you definitely do not need to do either of those things to be polysecure. People who are solo poly and relationship anarchists can be in securely attached relationships. People who are married and live with their spouse can also have secure attachment-based relationships with their non-nesting partners, especially when vetoes and prescriptive hierarchy are not at play. What matters here is that you have a shared vision about the depth, breadth, and level of involvement that you all want together, and that everyone is able to follow through with what you've agreed to. For us to feel safe and secure in our relationships, we need to know that our partners want to be there for us and will be to the best of their ability. And so some level of commitment to being in relationship together is important. Depending on what stage of relationship you are in, it might look like a commitment to staying in exploration of the relationship together without specifically defining the future or integrating your lives. It could be a commitment to building an official relationship that you want to have longevity and or be more interwoven in. Or it could be a commitment to building a life together where you are in it for the long haul. Commitment can be expressed in many ways. Traditionally, it is solidified through marriage, owning property, having kids, or wearing certain types of jewelry. But legal, domestic, or ornamental undertakings are not the only way to show dedication. In a 2018 talk on solo polyamory at the Boulder Non-Monogamy Talk Series that I host, Kim Keen offered the following ways that people practicing non-monogamy can demonstrate commitment to their partners. These are sharing intimate details, like hopes, dreams, fears, and being vulnerable with each other. Introducing partners to people who are important to you. Helping your partners with moving, packing, homework, job hunting, shopping, etc. Having regular time together, both mundane and novel. Making the person a priority. I suggest defining what being a priority means to each of you, though. Planning trips together. Being available to partners when they are sick or in need. Collaborating on projects together. Having frequent communication that's meaningful to both of you. And finally, offering physical, logistical, or emotional support through such things like going to doctor's appointments, hospital visits, helping with your partner's family, helping with pets, cars, children, taxes, and so on. Some commitment reflection questions. In each of your relationships that are already attachment-based, or for the relationships that you would like to become more attachment-based, discuss the following questions with your partners. What does commitment mean to you? What aspects of commitment are most important to you? For example, structural, emotional, or public. Why do we want to be attachment figures for each other? What does being an attachment figure look like to you? Do we each have the time and availability to offer this level of involvement? The broad strokes of being polysecure. Once you are clear that being an attachment figure is what each of you wants, whether in a two-person or multi-person relationship, figuring out how to do this securely is the next step. Partners being a safe haven and a secure base for each other is key for being polysecure. Being a safe haven for each other. John Bowlby and his contemporaries believed that for a partner to become an attachment figure, the relationship would serve as both a safe haven and a secure base. The bedrock of being polysecure in our relationships is feeling that we have a safe haven to turn to. This happens when our partners care about our safety, seek to respond to our distress, help us co-regulate and soothe, and are a source of emotional and physical support and comfort. Similarly, when our partners are struggling or in need, we can be a safe haven by being there for them in warm, caring, and receptive ways. When we can't physically be there for our partners, we do as best as we can to support them from a distance until we can be in physical proximity again. In search of relationship safety, our attachment system is primed to seek the answers to certain questions regarding our partners. both consciously and unconsciously, we are looking to know, if I turn towards you, will you be there for me? Will you receive and accept me instead of attack, criticize, dismiss, or judge me? Will you comfort me? Will you respond in a way that calms my nervous system? Do I matter to you? Do I make a difference in your life? Can we lean into and rely on each other? Interestingly, research consistently shows that people who have safe haven relationships in their life, whether through romantic partnership or through their family, are more resilient in the face of life stressors and trauma. Attachment research has looked at many different populations, including orphans, people who have experienced natural disasters, assault victims, veterans who were in combat, refugees, people who were in New York City during 9/11, people in concentration camps in World War II, as well as people who have had heart attacks or are recovering from surgery in the hospital. This research has found that when people in all these difficult and different situations have their safe haven attachment figures around them, either during or quickly after the event, they recover faster, experience less physical and emotional pain, and are less likely to have escalating symptoms of PTSD. Here are some examples of things you and your partners can do to be safe havens for each other. Give emotional support and comfort. Listen to each other with full attention. Inquire and share about feelings and needs. Track what is going on in each other's lives and make sure to follow up and inquire about those things. Help in practical ways when a partner is tired or sick. Discuss or debrief events of the day or things that are important to each of you. Let your partners know how and why they matter to you. Here are some safe haven reflection questions. So in each of your relationships that are attachment-based, or for the relationships that you would like to become more attachment-based, ask yourself, how does this partner already act as a safe haven for me? In what ways do they show up for me that feel supportive and comforting? How can this partner help me feel even more safe with them? How can this partner help me feel even more supported or comforted by them in general or in specific situations? In what ways can I show up more as a safe haven for this partner? Being a secure base for each other. When safety is established with our attachment figures and we have an internalized felt sense that we can turn towards them and lean on them when needed, we are freed up to securely turn away from them and engage in the world, whether with them by our side or on our own. A secure base provides the platform from which we can move out into the larger world, explore, and take risks. This exploration facilitates our sense of personal competence and healthy autonomy. Similar to how children want to show their parents their latest drawings, tricks, accomplishments, or discoveries, as adults, we need to share the new things we've learned, the things we've achieved, and the things we're excited about. Being and having a secure base in our partnerships means supporting each other's personal growth and exploration, independent activities, and supporting other relationships, even when these actions require time apart from each other. Secure base partners will not only support our explorations, but will also offer guidance when solicited and lovingly call us out on our shit. They function as a compassionate mirror for our blind spots and all the ways we may be fooling ourselves, whether through self-aggrandizement or self-limitation. While being a secure base may appear to be easier or more fun than being a safe haven, do not underestimate how intimately personal and deeply vulnerable it can be for a person to share their visions, hopes, curiosities, and dreams. It also requires faith to be able to turn away from a partner and then trust that you can safely turn back. In simple terms, I see being a safe haven as serving the role of accepting and being with me as I am, and a secure base as supporting me to grow beyond who I am. Some examples of things that you and your partners can do to be secure bases for each other. You can encourage each other's personal growth and development, support each other's work and/or interests, listen to each other's hopes, dreams, and visions. Listen when your partners share about their experiences in other relationships, of course, assuming that the information they're sharing is appropriate and consensual. Have conversations about things that are intellectually or emotionally stimulating to each other. Acknowledge each other's capabilities and possibilities for growth. Compassionately bring to light your partner's limitations and blind spots. Offer words of encouragement when your partners take on new responsibilities, go on dates with others, or take a risk or learn something new. Here are some secure base reflection questions. So in each of your relationships that are attachment-based, or for the relationships that you would like to become more attachment-based, you can ask yourself, how is this partner already acting as a secure base for me? What does growth look like for me? Is it usually a shared or a personal experience, or both? Are there other ways that I want encouragement or support in my individual growth or with my visions and dreams? How could my partner support me in regard to my other relationships? How could I best support or encourage my partner's dreams or aspirations to grow and develop? How could I better show genuine interest or curiosity in things that are important to my partners? How could I better support my partners in their other relationships? A benefit of non-monogamy is that you don't have to provide or expect to receive all of this from one partner. Different partners can be more of a safe haven, a secure base, or both, offering different facets of each. We all have different strengths, and it can be wonderfully satisfying to have some partners that support you in safe haven ways while others offer more of a secure base. When I first began presenting at non-monogamy conferences, I was nervous. I had experience presenting in academic settings and in leading workshops, but the conference format was different for me. I didn't know whether the non-monogamous audience would connect with what I was talking about. I was presenting on emotional triggers, so in retrospect, it really was a slam dunk topic for the non-monogamous audience. But at this time, I was still nursing my infant son on demand, so being away from him for more than 3 or 4 hours felt like a big deal. I needed both emotional support and logistical help with my son. Thankfully, I had 2 different partners who could take on these roles for me. My co-parent and husband at the time, Dave, was an amazing secure base. He cleared his day to be with our son and gave me the freedom and encouragement to go rock it as a presenter. He reassured me that my son would be fine while I was gone and that he wouldn't starve if he couldn't nurse at the exact moment he wanted to. Dave also reminded me to have fun while I was presenting, which was precisely what I needed to hear right before I gave that talk. In this incident, he was a secure base that I needed to be able to confidently turn away from my family and go take a risk in the larger world. However, since he was caretaking for our son, he was understandably not available for any of the safe haven types of emotional support that I also needed. This is where my other partner, Sam, stepped in. Sam wasn't able to be at the conference with me, but they made themselves available to talk on the phone right away when my talk was done. They were excited to hear about my experience. They gave me their full attention as I debriefed everything I needed to. In that instance, Sam was my safe haven. I could let my guard down with them, lean into them, and experience being accepted with love, warmth, and attunement. Both partners came through for me exactly how I needed, and neither needed to be or do more than they actually did. On a separate but similar note, I presented information in this chapter at a different polyamorous conference and bumped into an attendee from that conference several months later. She told me that after hearing my talk, she realized that all three of her current partners were a safe haven for her, but that none of them were really functioning in secure base ways. This person was fulfilled and content with how her partners were showing up for her, so she decided not to request that any of them take on more of a secure base role. She also felt it wasn't necessary to take on a fourth partner who could provide a secure base. Instead, she decided to start acting in more secure base ways for herself, which she did by encouraging her own growth and expansion. In just a few short months, she started a blog that she had long thought about and also bought and renovated the vintage car of her dreams. To me, this example demonstrates the importance of how we do not always have to turn to our partners to meet our safe haven or secure base needs, especially when our pre-established relationship dynamics are working well. We can focus on cultivating a more secure attachment with ourselves, which is one of the pillars of being polysecure. Chapter 9 focuses on the importance of being our own safe haven and secure base so that we can better establish a secure attachment with ourselves. When attachment ruptures and trauma occur, we can lose access to the parts of ourselves that are able to be safe haven through self-soothing, self-nurturance, self-compassion, and self-acceptance, and to the parts of us that are able to be a secure base through self-encouragement, healthy standards, appropriate boundaries, and alignment with our own values. While having multiple partners to turn to for a secure base or safe haven is a definite benefit of non-monogamy, we can't forget how powerful and important it is to also rely on ourselves in these ways.